y'all, it's me, Melissa, and welcome to Craps, a day in the life with a woman with CRPS. Today we have a special guest. Yay!
Woo!
Woohoo! Welcome, Lisa, everybody, all the way from Canada. Yep, I even get guests from Canada. In fact, she is a repeat guest, and I love her to death, and I'm so glad she's here. Welcome, Lisa!
Oh, thank you, thank you. You're kind of making me sound like a repeat offender. Oh, goodness.
No,
well,
in a good way, in a good way.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Well, it's nice to see you.
It's nice to see you.
I know. So should we tell everybody that we actually like finally hung out this summer? And
yes,
it was fabulous. Oh,
it was so fabulous. Y'all, I got these beautiful pictures on my wall. She's on my family wall.
I know. I keep meaning like I have to print mine still. So for those of you who listen to Melly Mel here regularly, she was a fantastic Miss South Carolina for the Miss USA pageant. I personally think you were robbed of the title, but you know, that's just one woman's opinion.
My mother, my father, my husband.
Yeah, like I think we were all like, yeah, she was robbed. But you did like win the most awards, which was you know, noteworthy. I mean, if we were playing Super Mario Kart, you probably would have won, not Mario Kart, Mario Party. You probably would have won the game overall, because if you get all the like extra award stars, everyone else. So I'm like, so you really won in the end. That's just the
That's
way.
Right. I did, because I got to see you. And that was like one of the biggest things is when you told me that you would come to Ohio to see me at that pageant. I mean, I was just like, oh, I'm gonna see Lisa, you know. So it made the experience of like everything else kind of just like was whatever, because I got to see you. And because,
so in other words, like I was shinier than the whole year of work that you put up to that experience.
Yes,
that's hilarious.
Yes, but we've had more than a year of work of knowing.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I mean, listen.
Yeah.
The universe had other plans for us. We've tried a few times, but you know, COVID. Yay.
COVID.
Yeah.
Because your border was open, and then the week we come, like the week before
closed.
It was open, then we come, then they close it, and then the week after they open it again. What in the heck is that?
That's what happens when you have a child running your country. But I mean, I think that's a story for another day.
No, because we are actually going to talk about CRPS month, you know, the month of November, and then six is the first Monday of every November is Color the World Orange Day. I know that's the main, I know some people call it different things, but I know that's
I've always heard it as like Color the World Orange,
is it okay?
Or, at least maybe that's how it started originally.
Yeah.
I don't know, you know, I kind of think to myself that year after year, you know, we do we use our social media platforms to do a lot of like awareness stuff, and we do, you know, the Orange Shirt Day, which now, so in Canada, it's interesting because Orange Shirt has a different meaning in this country. It's related to like the truth and reconciliation commitments with our Indigenous communities. And Orange Shirt Day represents like, I don't know if you guys heard in the news, like over like 2020, 21, during that time, that they started discovering like all of these unmarked graves underneath the residential schools that Indigenous children were forced into. So like, like hundreds, even thousands of like dead children under all these schools, right? So Shirt Day is now like an annual event where it's like to like learn from that experience and commemorate and all that. So I find the color, the world orange thing now a little like weird to me. But I think my challenge with this annual thing that we do is that I don't know if it achieves anything. You know what I mean? Like, you know me, I annoy the crap out of everyone who follows me on social media. I swear, like every year I lose some people because it's like every day I'll be posting links to articles and, you know, I'm bombarding people. And it's kind of like I've gotten to the point, like this year I haven't done anything, which I'm sure you've noticed. But I really just haven't done anything, not because of CRPS, just because of, you know, the conflict on the other side of the world. And I just, I'm not in the headspace, you know what I mean? Yeah. But,
and you've been through a lot this year. I mean, there's just like a lot of stuff that's happened.
Yeah. So like, I don't know, this year, I don't really just want to do anything on my platform right now, kind of thing, I would say.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, in this time that I haven't done anything and I've had time to just sit and look and reflect and see what other people are doing, mm-hmm. I've come to this conclusion that like year after year we do this and I don't know if we actually achieve anything, right?
Yeah.
Because if you think about it, like, so we get different monuments around the world to light up orange, mm-hmm. right? But if you think about how that actually works, it's somebody in the CRPS community who goes to the local municipal entity that oversees that. Like for us in Toronto, it's the CN Tower, Niagara Falls, they light up the falls, right? But there's just like, there's a link online for that entity that oversees that thing that you just submit your thing every year. And if you mm-hmm. do it in time, it happens, right? So like, even there, I think to myself, is there really enough meaning to it? Because let's be honest, every single cause has a ribbon. Every single ribbon has a color. Every single color gets lit up in a building a certain time of year. And I just like, I often wonder if we are, I don't know. I don't know what, I don't know where I'm going with this because I don't have a recommendation and I'm not the type of person who likes to like just sit and complain, but I feel like we have to do something as a community, like mm-hmm. moving forward to mobilize. And I think like, you know, we were talking about this for a while, some of us, right? Like, mm-hmm. I remember like 2018, 2019, we were talking about this idea of having kind of like a international council where like entities that are doing CRPS work in different countries could all come together and sit on one like network so that we're sort of like streamlining things. But I'm really coming back to the fact of like, we really need to get some uniformity across countries and stuff like that. Yes. Because I still think that the only people that learn about CRPS are the people that are affected by CRPS.
Exactly. And their families and their caretakers.
Right. Exactly. And, you know, I'll be honest with you. So, you know, in the summer that Take Care of Maya documentary came mm-hmm. out on Netflix.
Yep.
And I have to tell you, I'm very disappointed. You know, normally when they put out good documentaries on Netflix, suddenly there's like a whole cultural shift, right? Like, like Tiger King, for example, right? Yes. Suddenly everybody knew about like the private sales of wild animals and stuff.
Yes.
I had really high hopes for that show that they would bring like some serious awareness to CRPS. Mm-hmm. And I get it. Like the goal of that documentary was not to highlight CRPS. It was to highlight, you know, the child welfare system, the legal system, the, you know, the violence, children's rights and the medicalization of children and things like that. And I don't begrudge them that at all because, you know, I work in developmental services and, I run, a family advisory council for the agency I work at. And one of the mothers, has a medically fragile child. And she had called me, in the summer when I was on parental leave and she mm-hmm. was having a really hard time, like, getting nursing for her child. And, you know, we were just talking about the fact that the system is really like, it's not designed in any way, shape or form to like protect family choice and rights over the medical system. Right. So, you know, I had said to her, why don't you, I don't remember what the context of it was, but it was something where I said to her, you know, you can just say no, you can push back, you can say you don't want that treatment for your child, like you have rights and, and this and that. And she was saying to me that like she knows a lot of families that have ended up in the exact same situation where the hospital's gone to court and they've become that guardian. And, you know, so it does happen. It definitely does happen. And I'm sure in this, you know, in the States, it definitely happens in a more mm-hmm. like volatile way than it does here. But I think at the end of the day, I just wish that I almost wish that instead of it being like a feature film documentary, that they had made it a series. Because if they had made it a series, they could have done like quite a few episodes on CRPS first. Mm-hmm. And I think the benefit would have been to see, you know, the reality is the situation that they were in was very much a result of the medical community not understanding CRPS. And if the clinicians do not understand it, then how do we expect the social workers, the judges, the lawyers, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of like, I don't know. I think every year we come back to it and we look at it and we're like, okay, where are the advances in the science? Where are the advances in the funding? Where are the... Mm-hmm. And I don't get the sense that we're making much progress. I don't know about you. Like,
I can understand that because it seems like every year, you know, I'm going into my eighth year of having CRPS, and from the eighth year to now, I haven't seen anything. It's all the same,
right?
You like know, you see more people. I see more people talking about it. That's because I'm on CRPS groups. And, you know, and those are the people that I follow majority. I'm like, oh, that person has CRPS. I'm going to click on their follow, you know. But as in, you know, there's few people that, you know, do walks and runs and stuff like that. And
yeah, absolutely. And listen. Things,
but it's not like breast cancer awareness.
Of course. And like, and obviously we have to also be realistic, and CRPS affects a much smaller population of human beings than something like breast cancer. There's also the reality of certain charities just have monopolies on fundraising, and it's a terrible situation, and that's what we're up against. But, and I just want to be clear, like, I am not knocking the advocacy work that CRPS warriors, we're going to call them, because I don't think it's, you know, we're not patients, we're warriors. I'm not knocking that.
Yes.
That has been the groundbreaking work that has gotten to where we're at now. And there are many, many people that have worked very, very hard for a lot longer than you and I.
To
create awareness and to create a voice in a space. And I am eternally grateful, eternally grateful. I just think that we are at a, you know, we're at a point in like the evolution of medical research and science where we're not moving the cause forward in a way that's going to get us to the point where there's more research being done, there's more money being put into it. We're just kind of like re-educating our own social circles. And that's the thing that really concerns me, is like, how are we ever going to get this on the agenda of medical researchers when it's just not really like touched on? And I have to tell you, I scan medical journals on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. I am that level of nerd.
But that's good. We need people that are nerds.
Well, you know, like I come from like a professional background where we use like evidence-based clinical science when, you know, we do stuff. And so I'm always thinking to myself, well, you know, we're going to find someone somewhere out there is doing this groundbreaking research. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm going to pause because there is one thing that I'm very excited about, and I'm going to come back to that in a minute.
Yeah.
But I think that in general, there's not like major, like, okay. So in Canada, for example, the research that I'm seeing that's coming out is things like, oh, trying this type of laser therapy, or the, you know, all these like non-regulated kind of like off the shelf treatments that are not the typical like medical modality kind of thing. But what I want to see is I want to see like research around the sympathetic nerve interactions and the brain, and, you know, like that very like that heavy brain research, that heavy like learning to understand the sympathetic nervous system better, because as a medical community, we don't understand it, which is quite interesting because it pretty much controls your entire life, right? That's your fight or flight system. It controls how your physical body engages. It also controls how you handle things emotionally, mentally, you know what I mean? So it's probably one of the most understudied areas of the body, but it's probably like the one that needs it the most, because it's not just CRPS that those, like PTSD is stored in the, you know? So I haven't seen a lot of groundbreaking stuff, with the exception of one thing that I am super excited about. And I know this is a controversial topic, and probably half the people that are listening are going to be like, boo. But I'm coming at this from a perspective of someone who had a father who was on a organ transplant list for 11 years. Yeah. And, you know, I recognize the ethical quandaries, but I also really see the cost benefit, the benefits outweigh. So what I'm talking about is stem cell research.
Yes.
Okay. So the Cleveland Pain Clinic, and by the way, you know, we were like right there. Like literally right there.
Right there.
And
it was like almost,
it was like two streets over, right? Mm-hmm. Like I drove there. Like when I was looking for the Walmart, I happened to end up in their parking lot somehow. And I'm sitting here and I'm like, you and I, because it was the last day we were there. I'm like, you and I are idiots because we should have like popped in here and like,
exactly,
you know what I mean?
Right?
Like we were literally like a 5-minute drive away.
I know.
Well, lesson learned. But so they have received a multi-million dollar grant for a 5-year research study to look at stem cell treatments for CRPS. This is like huge, huge.
I'm excited about it.
I'm excited
with
too.
You. I'm in the half that's with you.
Yeah, I'm, you know, and this is why I'm saying, so when I said like, you know, I sit on the page, you know, one of the things that, for those of you who are not very familiar with like the ethical quandaries of stem cell, you know, in different countries, there's different legislation around doing stem cell research. Like it's really, to my knowledge in Canada, it's not super kosher. But the ethics around it is, you know, kind of like, at what point are you playing God? Because the idea with stem cells also comes back to the idea of, you know, like cloning and rejuvenating. So one of the things that I know that for a long time that people who do stem cell research were looking at, they were looking at how could stem cell research tackle the issue of organ donation and organ shortages, right? Mm-hmm. So like my father was in renal failure for 11 years, which is kidney failure, and he needed a transplant, but he was in like 100% kidney failure. So every time he would get like well enough to get back on the list, something would happen. He would have a setback. And, you know, so it just, unfortunately, he passed away from it. But I just remember thinking for years and years and years, like, imagine if we could grow organs in, you know, in these settings, imagine how many lives we would save, right? Mm-hmm. And we wouldn't have to rely on another life being lost to save lives. Exactly. So, you know, like I look, there's a risk with everything we do in life. I think like on the one hand, we control stuff like that, that could engage in major, major medical breakthroughs and mm-hmm. help with so many diseases that, you know, kill people in the world. But on the other hand, we have no legislation around building like AI bots that can literally like copy your freaking whole digital footprint and,
exactly.
You know, right. So like, it baffles my mind. So I'm excited for the outcomes of the Cleveland Pain Clinic research. I was doing a little bit of like background research to see like, what are they looking at? And, you know, is this like a phase 1 trial? Because, you know, you got to do multiple phases of trials mm-hmm. before it becomes like sort of FDA approved, so to speak. So the good news, it's not a phase 1 trial. They've already done like, they've done something lab-based that informed the proposal for this one. From what I'm gathering, they're going to be looking at like, you know, injecting stem cells probably somewhere into the nervous system to see if those stem cells can sort of rejuvenate in a way to reset the nervous system, right? Mm-hmm. So the hope is if we inject these stem cells, will it turn off that button that we can't turn off, right?
Yeah.
And if it doesn't turn it off, will it at least dull it for a period of time, or dull it in a way that it reduces your pain experiences, increases your quality of life kind of thing?
Exactly.
Yeah. So, you know, I think the reality is for us, we won't see the benefits of this type of research for like 20, 30 years, probably.
Oh, yeah.
But it gives me hope for like future generations that they won't have to suffer through like we have.
Exactly. And hopefully it's something that they, if it, like, works really well with the patients that they're going to, you know, like come in and do this research on, that they go straight to that, and hopefully insurance pays for it. It's not going to be out of pocket like most of, well, in America, I know we have to pay out of pocket for a lot of our medicine because
ours is not covered in Canada. We don't have a pharmacare system here either.
Like some of my medicine is, but not all of it. So my medication is like a house payment every month.
Oh, I know. Like there's certain things for me that are not paid for, even though we have universal health care.
Yeah.
They've deregulated so many things over there. Like technically I should be able to, you know, go to the eye doctor and go to the dentist. And like, these are all medical things, but you have to pay for them out of pocket. So yeah, no, totally.
That's where I have a beef with that, because I'm from, you know, I was a dental assistant. So if you don't have, your mouth is part of your body, so that's preventive. So if your mouth is, I mean, rotting away, or you have abscesses or anything like that,
right,
and you don't have the money to pay for it, I mean, you can have
stroke,
you can have a heart attack, you can have like all different kind of stuff, and that's from your mouth. So I don't understand that.
You know, when we moved to Canada, there were certain things. So physiotherapy, for example, when we moved here in the late 80s, early 90s, now, I was a very young kid, so my recollection is a bit fuzzy, but from what I can remember, like, they deregulated physiotherapy at some point in my childhood. Like, it used to be covered. And I know for a fact that, like, vision tests, like that kind of stuff used to be covered. And when I was a teenager, they deregulated it. So, look, you know, it comes down to... I'm not even going to go. It's a whole, you know, story around, you know, insurance companies, government insurance companies, and this and that. But yeah, you make a very good point. When something like this does come out, what's the cost going to be attached to it, and who's going to be eligible for it? Like, I would totally sign up to be a guinea pig right now. I'm not going to lie.
I would too.
But like, I don't even know if we would qualify, but I would totally be like, I will fly out to your clinic every week if I have to. Guinea pig me up. Like, what's the worst that's going to happen?
Exactly. Know, like,
I feel like it can't get any worse at this point.
Because what else is it going to do? What's what I say too? It's like, why not try? Just like, I mean, yeah, let's try it. Or I'll research it and I'm like, hey, can we try this? Because I think I've told my NP, you know, nurse practitioner for my pain management, more than she's told me. So,
and isn't that funny?
Yeah, I mean,
we're always educating the professionals that we go to seek support. No, not lost on me.
So it's like, okay, so I know about this. So why not? Why not?
I think that that's like so key. You know, I have met quite a few people with CRPS over the years. And I find like it always comes back to this thing. And, you know, you and I have talked about this many, many times. If you don't recognize that you drive the bus with your doctor, not the doctor driving the bus, you're going to suffer with this disease your entire life.
Yes.
You have to be, and I want to be very clear here. And I am somebody who studies human rights. I study policy, like all of that is my bread and butter and my background and all those things.
Yeah.
But I will tell you straight up, and I am somebody who has been engaged in the medical system since birth. I spent like the first 3 years of my life pretty much in and out of a hospital. Right. You have to be the decision maker when it comes to your CRPS. Not only do you have to be the decision maker, you have to be the chair of the committee, the person setting the agenda, the person delegating. You have to, and you have to recognize, and I say this to every single person with CRPS, 9 out of 10 times, the person sitting in, if you are sitting in a room with a physician, clinician, professional of any sorts, I will tell you without even knowing you that 9 out of 10 of the time, you have more of an expertise in CRPS than that professional that you are visiting.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
So, you know, because people ask me, like, listen, your mom was amazing. Okay. So when I
she was so funny.
I'm never gonna forget this. So when I met Melissa's mom, she introduced me and her mom turned around and she goes, "You don't have CRPS, you're walking." which was so funny. This is one of those things. Like I do get asked regularly. Like, it's funny. So I have an amazing staff team. Like, I manage two programs and the people that I get to support are fabulous human beings, just so fabulous. But I was talking to one of my staff and, she just comes up to me and she goes, "Yeah, I don't know how you do what you do. Like, do you have like, are you like a hologram? Like, it just doesn't make sense kind of thing. Like how you manage this, because like, honestly, you are so busy at work and did it right." And she's like, and I, like the other day she wrote me and she said she was like watching something on YouTube about CRPS and, you know, so like, amazing team. They're always like very supportive of anything like that. But this is one of the things that I get asked all the time is like, how do you do it? Okay. So there's a couple of things. Number one, I'm a real biatch, to be perfectly honest, right? Like anybody who knows me knows that like I speak my mind.
Yes, she does.
You know, I educate myself on things that I don't know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you tell me I can't do something, it's almost like a challenge at that
point.
Yes,
it is.
But
I know all these things about her.
Yeah. But I was also raised by a nurse, right? And my mother is she's retired now. She's a fabulous nurse. And she's also a Rhodesian woman who, you know, doesn't take shit lightly. And she taught me from a very young age, like the doctors know very little. They really do. Like, unless it's a specialist and that is what they study and they research and they write and publish, the average family doctor does not know that much more than you. So you have to remember that you are the expert on yourself. The other thing is that, like, I have learned, you know, being a disability advocate, understanding like the medical model versus the social model. Mm-hmm. I know that the medical system has the tendency to bully patients that are vulnerable, right? And they lean on the fact that someone who's living with chronic illness is just so beaten down in life that they don't have the emotional bandwidth to fight mm-hmm. back, right? But that does us a disservice. And I always say, like, if I have to pick a fight, it's going to be with a clinician. It's going to be with someone medical, because that is going to impact my life the most, right? Yes. So I push back on a lot of things. Like, I cannot tell you how many pain specialists I've seen in my life. I also cannot tell you how many times I've said, "Don't talk to me about Cymbalta, Lyrica, or gabapentin. Yeah. Don't even bring it up. I'm telling you now, it's not on the table for me," right? Mm-hmm. And I will go in and I will set boundaries from the get-go. And that is what makes a difference, because, you know, I say it's like with everything in life, whenever you're dealing with anything, the world tends to take the approach of like the rule of 1%, right? So I'll use this in, like, let's say education, for example, right? Like, lots of families, lots of parents complain that school boards aren't equipped to like provide the right type of support needs for this or that. And then you'll hear stories where like children's rights are being like egregiously violated and this and that. And I always say, like, well, you know, it's the principle of the 1%, right? We bank on the fact that 99% of the population don't know any better. And for the 1% that do, we'll accommodate them, right? So it's the same kind of thing. I think you have to take that approach with medicine, is that you have to go in and from the get-go set the boundaries of, I know what I'm talking about when it comes to my own body. And you are not going, I don't care how many degrees you have, you're not going to have a better expertise on my internal system than myself. Mm-hmm. When you start the relationship that way, you have a very different experience. And you don't end up in this situation where, like, I think a lot of chronic illness patients get bullied into taking medication. They get bullied into trying things mm-hmm. that they don't like. And they're like so ethically against. And it's done in these very subtle ways where, you know, it's these microaggressions by practitioners, right? And, or the, well, if you don't do this, I'm not going to prescribe that, or, you know, like those kinds of things. And so, you know, you got to be a boss. You got to be a boss of yourself. You do. And you got to be really clear. Like, I, again, you might have studied CRPS for a long time. Mm-hmm. You're not going to understand it from the perspective of the lived experience. You're just not. You're not.
And you're not on the case of just the fact that every CRPS person I've ever talked to, warrior that I've ever talked to, we are the same, but yet we're so different.
Completely different. Yeah.
So I'm sorry. I don't know any doctor that could be a true specialist on this, because it's just so, until they find that, like, you know,
how can you be a specialist on something that there's no science around, right?
Exactly.
And
there's 2 pages in the medical book about, you know, and you go take a weekend class in Palm Springs and you take one class out of the whole weekend. You know what I mean? It's like,
well, so do you know, I don't know about in the States, but in Canada, there's no actual, like, you know how you can study to be like a nephrologist or an oncologist or one of these things? When it comes to pain, there's no specialty like that. So all you have to do is take, like, it's pretty much like a 48-hour course, or not even that much. And you can be a pain specialist. So you actually come to find that the majority of pain clinics, a lot, like, all of them have to have at least one staff that's an anesthesiologist, right? Mm-hmm. Because they're doing things like nerve blocks. But the other doctors, so many of them are family doctors that figured out that if they take this stupid course, that, you know, that suddenly they can start doing their job where they charge 3 times more, right? Because of that specialty.
Same thing here. Right.
And so I'm like, you know, it's like I always say to people, veterinary students get like 3 times the amount of training on pain management and pain in the body than medical doctors. So
it's a lot harder to be like a veterinarian than what it is to be a doctor. I mean, it's like, at least it is here, I mean, because you figure you have to mess with people, well animals that don't speak, and you have to know what's going on, but yet here we are, we're talking to them and they say we're wrong.
But are we all talking to them?
That's true.
I feel like a lot of people I speak to, especially, and not to show gender bias here, I recognize that men and women suffer from CRPS, but I find that a lot of the women, especially the ones where their marriages have broken down and they're now on their own, like, I get the sense sometimes that they are not really even fighting for themselves anymore sometimes, right? And like, so, yeah, it's a very lonely disease, to be perfectly honest.
It is. Very much so. I mean, and I can be, and actually I was that person when I was first had my surgery, and I know something was wrong, and I kept saying it, and here's, yo, I did the surgery perfect, it's fine, and, you know, I'm a woman, I don't know pain, and, oh, you're just, you know, crazy, there's something going on in your head, and all these things that was told to me. And I started going backwards instead of forward.
Yeah.
Because it was getting in my head. And luckily, though, my daughter and my husband, which it was majority of my daughter, though, because, you know, he had to work, so she took me to my appointments. And finally, she was like, you know what? You better stop. Because my mom is the toughest person I've ever known. Yeah. I don't know who this person is. They're talking to me about me, how I'm just, like, giving up. Because, I mean, like she said, I mean, she fixed her own broken figure, or she, you know.
Right,
she,
and I don't think it's giving up. I think it's just like this disease, it beats you down, and not even just physically, like the emotional piece, the isolation, the immense amount of grief that we go through on, you know, every day we wake up and discover something else we can't do, right? Like,
exactly.
So I think it's
and
that.
It changes.
Yeah. It does. It does. You know, I think like you make a good point though. Like if you're not one of those people that feel like you have that fight in you, you have to find an advocate to come with you to do it for you.
Yes.
And it doesn't have to be someone you're related to. It, you know, it can be your friend who you know is like me, who has a mouth and will, you know,
exactly.
I'm found with other friends to be their advocate in medical appointments. Yeah.
Those first 2.5 years, it would not have taken 2.5 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
That doctor would have felt so below.
But you know what? I have to tell you, like, I am not someone who obviously who gets like intimidated easily, like, you know, right? But I will say this. There is this, it's this like subtle abusive structure in pain management and chronic illness where it's almost like you just start to question your own sanity.
Yes.
So, you know, for me, long before I had CRPS, I had fibromyalgia. I had fibromyalgia. I think like now that we look back on it, I had like juvenile fibro. There's no question about that. And I really started exploring like the pain aspect of it by the time I was like 18. Right. Mm-hmm. And it was not until I was in like I think I was already in like my fourth university degree at this point. Like this is how many years later.
Yeah.
Cause I was doing my graduate program in disability studies. And I just remember that at that point in my life, I had come to the conclusion that I did not have good coping mechanisms in life to deal with like all of the trauma that I had grown up with and stuff and all of my pain and, you know, those embodied experiences was mental health manifesting, right? Like I had gotten to that point where I was like convinced myself that like, you know, even though I'm, you know, I like to think that I'm fairly intelligent and I'm, you know, I've had the privilege of getting education and all those things. And I'm pretty self-aware, like, there were 12 years of constantly going to doctors, getting every test under the sun, specialists, telling people, you know, the narcotic's not working, this is not working, the pain's still there, this, that, and the other. And just, especially when you're a woman, being treated like it's in your head.
Yep.
And I think that that's what happens to a lot of pain patients. For me, fortunately, I didn't have to go through that with CRPS, right? And and that's because of, you know, I think that the fact that my CRPS was a result of a physical violent attack, it was easier for them to get to the conclusion that it was CRPS, right? Like it made sense because that is one of the key triggers of CRPS is some sort of violent trauma, right? So so they got there a lot quicker. They also got there quicker because we knew that I had explored all sorts of other diagnoses with the fibromyalgia that I didn't have. So I didn't have to go down that route again. And I learned about CRPS while I was trying to figure out what my fibro is. So once I had it, I knew what it was. I was in denial, but I knew what it was. So I cannot imagine how you deal with like what I went through with fibro. I don't know how I would be coping today with CRPS if that's what I had to go through to get to that diagnosis.
Yeah.
Right. Like, I don't know if I'd be standing today, to be perfectly honest, because even with my CRPS, the pain specialist I was seeing at the time didn't believe that I had it. Right.
Yeah.
And then he sent me to get the nerve conduction test. He sent me to a rheumatologist. He sent me to like 3 or 4 different people. All of them diagnosed me with CRPS. All of them sent him back reports saying it was CRPS. And he turned around, like, I remember the last one that I went to, and he sent me to a neurologist, and the neurologist wrote him back. And he's like, yep. And he was like the fourth person to confirm it.
Yeah.
And he's like, you know what? I referred you to him, but I just really don't think he knows what he's doing. Like it, you know, right. It's like, let me like delegitimize another medical professional than admit that I have no idea what I'm talking about. So, you know, even there, like I had to like essentially go and find a specialist who would believe me, but yeah, it's a very, very lonely disease. And you know what the problem I have? There's a lot of inner fighting in our community. I don't know if you experience that, but like, I have to be honest, I don't tend to socialize within the CRPS community. Yeah. I mean, other than you. And it's not because I don't like other people. It's, I don't like when people who are experiencing the same sort of victimhood kind of attack each other, mm-hmm. right? Like, I feel like there's so few of us. We need to unite and, mm-hmm. you know, we need to, and I know a lot of it has to do with, these are trauma responses, right? We take out our pain on each other because we don't have anyone else to take it out on, kind of thing. But
yeah,
I don't know. I get to the point where I'm like, you know what? We have enough people not agreeing with us and beating us down. Like, we shouldn't do it to each other, kind of thing.
Yeah. But, and it's true. It really is. I mean, even throughout the disability, you know, people that I am, like disability,
like the community.
Yeah, community. Thank you. My brain wasn't working there for a second.
No problem. You know,
CRPS and meds. But I also have a puppy over here wanting to play.
Oh, yeah. You have to show me the new puppy. Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. I love how you're like, we're not getting another dog. Got another dog.
I know. I know.
So cute. I can't wait to come and play with the dogs.
So yes, that's my sweet baby boy.
How old is he?
I have no clue.
Oh, okay. Did this one wander onto your yard as well?
Huh? Well, picked him up from a busy road, busy little highway, you know.
Oh.
And we got him from off there so he wouldn't get hit, and then we were gonna just, you know, find if it was anybody's dogs, or you like
put and nobody it up claimed
on
the, him,
and nobody claimed him. We put him on social media, we put it on like the town's social media and stuff like that. But nobody, it was nobody's. Yeah, you know, at least nobody claimed him. And so we were like, well, we'll find a home for him. And then
yeah, you found one.
Yeah, and then the day, this lady at Tommy's, my husband's work, Tommy's work, she was gonna send out, you know, the information I gave her and some pictures.
And, oh my god, he's so cute.
He wants to play. And
it's like trying to eat your back.
I know. So that day, it was a Tuesday, and Tommy messaged me and goes, are we sure we want to, you know, do this, or do we want to talk about like maybe keeping him? And right before he sent me that message, I already bought him a collar.
So with Oreo or whatever we were calling him, we went about it the wrong way. We thought it was naming him that would get we should have bought him a collar.
Collar, exactly. Hilarious. And I got exciting news for you. We're getting Oreo back.
Shut up. No. Tommy must be so excited.
Yes.
Oh, that's so exciting.
The sanctuary, they're doing great, but you know, because they try to make room for the dogs, you know, and at first they told me no. And then they did ask if we could just take a few back, you know, just to help them.
Just take a few dogs back.
Just take a few back. Hey, don't come back up. So, yeah. So, Oreo and Pete and, oh no, yeah, we're only getting two now because the one lady was like, no, we can't get rid of Red. I love her. So they're going to end up keeping her. So, yeah. So we're getting two back and help them out.
That's so funny.
And so, you know, they're a good stay outside. So they're going to be outside and we're going to try to find them homes. And Tommy goes, well, if we're getting Oreo back.
So context for people. They had this puppy that they were, well, a whole bunch of them that
It was eight puppies. And,
yeah, that kind of like rehomed themselves into your house.
Yes, and a foster mother dog.
Yeah, but there was one particular dog that Tommy, you could just tell like Tommy was so very clearly in love with this dog. Yes. And when I met up with him in Ohio, he was like, while we were waiting for Melissa one night, he's like pulling out his phone and he's showing me like a million pictures of this dog. Like you would think it's like his own child kind of thing. And you know, the pictures are like the dog like laying on the couch with him. And so Melissa and I were like, oh, this is so going to be Tommy's dog. But Tommy was adamant that he was not keeping this dog. So for a while we were like scheming and we were like, okay, well, what if we name him? If we name him, you can't give him away. This is very exciting that he's coming back.
So yes, he's coming back. So we are going to be a house full of puppies.
Now, again. Let me ask you something because my mother asked me this. So we have two little dogs in the house, mm-hmm. right? And you have what, five?
Five, yeah.
Big ones, pretty much.
Well, it was two small ones and three big ones, but now it's going to be like two.
Five big ones. Yeah. And,
well, yeah. One small one because Rue's a rat terrier. She's small. And then it's going to be four big ones now.
So you're going to have like horses essentially. But how on earth do you handle the care of so many dogs with CRPS?
So actually they help me because like you said, it is a very lonely disease. Mm-hmm. You get very, well, at least I know I got very, I was very depressed and
yeah.
You know, all this, you know, all the stuff that goes with CRPS. And like, if it wasn't for them, I don't know where I'd be, you know?
No, I totally get that. And like, we've talked before about like the benefits. The
care,
like so how, like, how do you like find the energy to like, you know, there's like five or six dogs you have to feed every day. You have to like clean up the house when there's dog fur. Like I can't even vacuum. How would I deal? Yeah. You know what I mean?
Well, it kills me to vacuum and sweep, but I just,
you just do it
all day. I just pick up hair all day.
Yeah.
Especially Roger, our long haired German Shepherd. I mean, forget it. You got hair everywhere. And even Sadie, who's a Labradoodle, but she was the runt and she's not, she sheds really bad. She majority has the lab, but she has these wiry hair. So she sheds. The other dogs aren't that bad. You know, because they have short hair and, you know, they're not that bad of them too. They are. But I just pick up hair all day. And we did have, you know, the robot vacuums, you know.
Yeah.
We did have one, but it kind of broke. Because we got, the first one we got was refurbished anyways. Refurbished one. So Tom, when we were moving, I said, do you want to take this? And he was like, no, we're just going to get a new one. We haven't got a new one yet. But I just sweep a room at a time, and if it takes me all week, or if I don't sweep for a few days,
then so be it. I have to
wear shoes anyways.
Yeah, true. True.
So I don't feel all the dirt.
Yeah.
All the sand that the dogs bring in.
And but, do all the dogs sleep in the bed with you? Majority. Am I the only person where my dogs sleep in the bed with me?
No. Oh no. Totally. Basically, Randall is the coon hound. He sleeps at the foot of the bed. Sadie sleeps right there beside him. Rue's up at our head. And now baby boy is, last night was the first night that he slept with me.
Oh my God, he's so cute. Yeah, he's so cute. I can't pay attention to you every time he comes into the frame.
And then Raja is usually on his bed because he has one of those hammock, the big bed things. He loves it. Yeah. He's either there or down on the floor by the bed. So, oh yeah. I'll send you the picture later. Tommy didn't send it to me. He took a picture of me this morning before he left to work. And, he said,
and is there room for Tommy in the bed as well? You're funny.
You know, if he wants.
So funny. Oh, goodness. Well, that's adorable. I'm so happy for you guys. Yeah. That puppy is adorable. Does he have a name or are you still figuring it out?
I'm calling him baby boy and nobody likes it.
Yeah, no, that's not a name.
That's what Tommy says and our daughter, Serena. They're both are like, Mom, you can't name him that.
No, you really can't.
The only person that agrees with me is a friend of mine that I met through Fight the Flame. It's a CRPS group. And, she's like, well, I like baby boy. And I'm like, you and me are the only.
Like, but does she really like it or is she just appeasing you?
Exactly.
That's right? Like,
that might be it.
Oh my God, he's so cute. He's very young.
He is. I mean, like, he is chewing on everything.
Well, he's like trying to climb all over you right now.
Oh, yeah. He just jumped down. So,
so am I cute. Able to
I even forgot where we were talking because of this.
I don't know. I also got distracted with the dogs, but you know.
But you know, they bring so much joy to my life, and I know yours does too.
And oh, yeah.
If it wasn't that little bit, well, look, you know, I have 5 dogs, so soon to be 7. But we are definitely trying to find a home for Pete. And Tommy's like, well, he is an outside dog, so we could. Because they even tried to bring him into their house, and
won't
he
come in.
wasn't. Yeah, he's an outside. He wants to be outside. So, you know, if he wants to come in every once in a while, but go back outside, it's fine. Yeah.
I mean, you live in a place where you can do that, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. They got lots of acreage, which baby boy definitely does, and so does Randall. So, yeah.
So cute.
So cute. But yeah, I think all the dogs are jealous of him, in fact. Even though they play with him, but then they get this, like, they'll, like, do that little growl at him or whatever. And I'm like, whatever.
Yeah.
Y'all are playing outside. I see it. I know what y'all are doing. Don't even. So yeah, they actually helped me and helped me with my CRPS. And mainly, I think it's more the depression and that kind of stuff. And, you know, just feeling lonely, and they keep my mind focused on other things. And,
well, you know, there's a lot of like research out there that shows that when you have like a nervous system based disorder, that like if you have dogs, like when they cuddle up to your body or sit, like it helps to regulate your nervous system. So there's, you know, there's a clinical reason to have them as well. I mean, if you need an excuse, who needs an excuse? Just
I do. I mean,
yeah,
it's true, because that was my platform for the pageant
Miss
I was
USA,
in July. Yeah. And it's true. I mean, they do. And when they cuddle up on me, I mean, it's like such a difference of how I feel. And, you know, usually like, oh my gosh, this laptop's getting so heavy. Oh, this is getting so heavy. Raj's head, he is a 120-pound German Shepherd. I think his head is like 50 of it. But he
That's
can lay on
hilarious.
my lap, and I do not care. You know what I mean? It's like,
yeah,
I know it's heavy and it's weighted on me and it does not feel good, but yet that's going to be, I'm going to sit there, I'm going to pet him, and I'm going to let his head be there. My laptop, I'm going to move around, you know, readjust it. And,
you know, yeah, whatever. For sure. For
but
sure. For
this
sure.
Unconditional love that he gives me, I'm going to let him give it to me. Because they're pretty
Why
good.
Not? Exactly. Why not? Right?
So,
yeah.
Yeah. You know, there is some days though that, you know, when you're bedridden or you just really cannot do it, those are the hardest days. And usually, you know, at least Tommy's here 3 days out of the week, but he's been working on these projects. So the past couple of weeks, he's been coming home later, and it's hard. Like, it's really hard on me because it's like all these hours.
Yeah,
and I'm breaking down and I'm slowing down, so it is hard. It is. And then when they have to go to bed, I have to make sure I have a person to take me. Like, Serena had to take me and Raja to the, well, not me to the vet, but so we can take Raja to the vet. And, you know, so I mean, it does get hard, but
and
outcome is worth it.
And you have like a super like awesome support system around you to help out too.
Yeah.
You know, that's key.
Yeah. I mean, my mom's not here all the time. Like, she'll be back on the 13th because I have a doctor's appointment on the 14th. And she hasn't been here for a few weeks. So that makes it harder too, because, you know, she's able to take me where I need to go, or if I just want to get out of the house, or she'll help. She will help me with the dogs to a point.
Right.
My mom loves my animals. She thinks they're great, but she is not an animal person, so that's okay. But, you know,
I feel you. Listen, to each their own, right?
Exactly.
Your mom's a friggin' hoot, by the way. Yeah. Like, yeah. One of my favorite human beings in the world.
Yes. You're one of her. She loves you. She's like, have you talked to Lisa? How's Lisa doing?
I'm like slowly but surely making this like subconscious plan to move towards South Carolina, even though I keep saying I'm never going to do it. But like,
let me tell you, Tommy's already, well, does she want to live in the guest room or she wants to...
I mean, I do work remotely. I mean, I mean, you know.
You can fly in for the meetings, you know.
And, you know, it might be a little bit difficult to, like, parent from a distance. Yes, but, you know, that's what technology is for, I assume.
On your mom.
I say this as I'm like, oh, can I go away for a week to visit you and leave my mom to take care of my kid? Because I feel guilty. And then I'm like, yeah, now I'm just going to move in instead.
Exactly. All right, mom, I'll see you later. She just has to know then. Yeah. Just later.
Yeah. No. Too funny.
I know. I can't wait. Mm. I'm so excited. We're just going to be like, yeah, we're going to have so much fun.
And we're going to go harass your brother, too.
Yes, we're going to go
harass him. Not been on here in a while, eh?
Yes, we're going to harass him.
Does Dutch still listen to your podcast?
He does when he has time. Right now, so he works at a fancy restaurant downtown Tulsa. You know, where you have to wear a tie and a jacket.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So he works there, and unfortunately, one of their managers is not there anymore, and so they haven't hired a new one. So he's been like working nonstop. So, yeah. So he's the days that he is able to kind of sleep in, or
he ain't listening to no podcasts.
Yeah, he's sleeping and doing his laundry and doing the things that he needs to do. So, yeah.
So, final thoughts. One thing that you would like to see happen in the next year with Life of CRPS?
I hope, well, like the biggest thing is like we need like this community that we come together and we, I know,
like a community of practice kind of thing. Yes. Yeah.
I would love to see that and, you know, get just word out more into the, you know, medical field about, hey, this is truly what CRPS is. This isn't what you just read on a page or two. This is what it is. Or this is my story of CRPS, because they have to understand that everybody is different. You can't compare me to another patient, because that has happened to me multiple times.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, so many times. I'm like, okay, that's great for that patient. And another thing, don't be talking about another patient to me. I know about
privacy.
I mean, you didn't give me the name, but still, it's like, don't.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that makes me feel like, you know, it used to be. Now I've learned to use my voice, because I was just in so much pain at the beginning. I was just in pain. And then finally I was like, but I never stopped saying, there's something else wrong. There's something else wrong. That's one thing I did not stop saying from the beginning. And it got to the point where I just said, no, I got to listen to myself. I got to listen and do what I tell other people to do and speak up for yourself and say, hey, I know about this. This is what I want to do. And that's what I've been doing. So I hope everybody can, you know, come out and be able to say, hey, you know, I need help. And I'm trying to get the words out, but I can't really say what I want to say. You know, I just want us to be able to,
like, have a unified voice kind of thing.
Yes. Yeah.
For sure.
Because it'd be
I think for me, like, what I would like to see, like, in the future, and I know, you know, if you have taken an interest in studying, like, the origins of CRPS, you probably know that there's been, like, I don't know, what is it, like, 250 different names for this disease over the years or something like that. I would actually like to see us shift away from the current title.
No, you're not the only one I've heard say that.
Well, I'll tell you why. Because you say complex regional pain, and what people hear, first of all, I have to tell you this funny story. Just one second. This just goes to show, that there are many medical professionals who do not take the initiative to educate themselves even when they know. I have been going to the same like medical cannabis clinic for, I don't know now, like maybe a decade, maybe, I don't know. Every single time I see this doctor, he reviews like, you know, your diagnosis and the amount of times that he keeps saying chronic regional pain syndrome. And every time I meet with him, I'm like, it's not chronic, it's complex.
Which leads me to believe that you still have not taken 5 minutes to do a Google search kind of thing.
Yep. I've had that.
Yeah. So why I would like to get away from it is because the pain is unbearable, but for me, it's not just the pain. Like, what has impacted my quality of living the most is the loss of motor function in my hands and feet. It's the, the temperature things in your skin you know, and like, I live in a country like Canada. So every time the seasons change, I feel like, you know, there's knives cutting through my skin kind of thing. It's the inability to think without losing your thoughts every 5 minutes, right? It's how it impacts your messaging centers, how it impacts your emotional regulation center. To me, that is really the bigger issue with CRPS. Like, it is a whole body experience, and the pain is just one component of it. And I have days where I can tolerate the pain, but I just cannot get my left hands and feet to work with my brain. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, oh yeah. Because sometimes I don't know if I should, but yeah, it is. It's like, you know, why is my hand just throwing things at Tommy? It's not me doing it. It's just doing it, you know?
Yeah. Or like the tremors that you get. Yeah.
Yes. Or, you know, I'm trying to get my water bowl filled up for my pups and I drop it. I want to drop it. But I don't think so.
Can I tell you something so funny? Last night I was talking to my daughter and she was joking with me because, you know, I sit in my room. Now, I don't sleep. You know that. I go to sleep at 6 a.m. and wake up at 7 and go to work.
Yeah.
I'm but, right
I take my two little naps.
Through the night, I as possible. And, well, I don't even do that. When do I have the time? But I drop shit all night long. And she was joking with me yesterday. She goes, you know, this is such a regular occurrence with you that I lay in bed at night. And I'm like, that's the remote control. That's her cell phone. That's, you know, like she's even figured out the sounds of the different things that I drop. Because it's so frequent.
That is so great.
Right? But that's it for me. Like, not being able to cook a meal without worrying that I'm going to take a hot pot off the stove and drop it on the floor, right? Like, so, and you know, like, I know so many people CRPS, like the inability to drive anymore, for example, right? And so, yeah, I always think like, it's really not a pain. It's pain, but it's just so much more than that.
Yes, because me not able to drive anymore. There's just no way. Yeah. I mean, even for me to sit in the vehicle is so bad.
So right.
I couldn't even, and then plus I get high anxiety when I'm, so I take anxiety pills, depression pills, whatever. And even though when I get in the car and we get like on a highway or whatever, forget it.
It's like your heart's racing, right? It's like,
and sometimes, I mean, I'll get to the doctor's appointment and they're like, oh, you need to calm down. Let's breathe. Because my blood pressure's up because it is. It's scary. Even though my accident didn't happen in a car wreck or anything, but now in my head, I swear someone's going to hit us.
You know? Well, that's trauma. That's a trauma response, right? Yep. Totally normal. The biggest issue that I've developed in the last, I would say, year or so. There's a small percentage of our population that struggle with auditory sensory issues. mm-hmm. and like hyper sensitivity. I've developed that somewhere in the last like year and a half. And what's interesting to me is my entire life I've had hearing loss problems, right? Mm-hmm. I have a lot of scarring in my ears. I've had like 8 sets of tubes, and like I have hearing loss on one side. And yeah. yet, since CRPS, I can hear sounds that like only dogs can pick up. And yeah. I find that the volume, it hurts. Like the volume of the TV when other people are watching, it bothers me. I cannot think and listen to people talking because it just like it bamboozles mm-hmm. my sensory system. So you know, I was like having this conversation today with like at work, we were talking about like the similarities and the sensory challenges between CRPS and autism, right? Mm-hmm. Very similar thing.
Yeah.
You look very cold right now, by the way.
I am, because I forgot my sweatshirt to let my dogs out. I'm going to grab it. Hey, oh, it's funny. 37 degrees. Well, no, it's 48 degrees right now.
Okay, no, hold on. I have to do the conversion so I understand what that is.
Oh, yeah, that's right. 48 degrees Fahrenheit.
This is terrible. That like, can you guys like just move to like the metric system like the rest of the world?
We tried it. It didn't work.
Oh my goodness.
Cool when they tried it.
Okay, so
everybody was like so lost, and they're like, okay, we're
so for the Canadians that are listening, it's like 9 degrees there right now. Which is not terrible. I feel like it's you know, it's hilarious. You know how like
yesterday was in the 80s, okay? And today is half the degrees than what it was.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, like at the same time, I'm Canadian, which is probably why I don't find it like that cold.
Exactly. I'm so bad. And I'm like, what?
I'm like 8 degrees. Like we have 8 degrees right now, and I'm still walking around in like a sweatshirt, nothing else. And
so I'm like, oh, you're freezing. My dogs are running everywhere except for Sadie and Raja. I don't know where they are. They'll be back. So yes, it's cold. Talking about those, you know, I call them icicles instead of knives. I say that fiery icicles are going through my body, and that's what's going on right now. And it was really windy earlier. Oh my gosh, that was so bad.
So I have these sleeve things that I have to wear on my arms this time of year because I can't handle like the breeze of the mm-hmm. any environment.
Yep.
It's well. Oh, you know what it is here right now, just to give you some perspective on why I don't find 8 degrees that cold right now here in Angus where I live, which is about 2 hours, like an hour and a half from Toronto. Nope, 2 hours nowadays with the traffic. Right now it is like -2 degrees for us
in Fahrenheit.
So no, in like, so if in Celsius hold on, I got a little button that says Fahrenheit. I can give you the Fahrenheit. There you go. So here right now it's 27 degrees.
Oh my gosh, I couldn't imagine.
Yeah. Nope. And it's gonna get so much colder as the winter goes.
That's why we will come in the summertime to go to.
Well, isn't that we agreed on, like the winter trip I come to you, the summer trip you come to me?
Yes, because by this weekend, like it's gonna be freezing tonight. It's gonna be can't remember what Tommy told me. It was me below freezing, like a couple degrees below. And then by this weekend though, it's gonna be like 69 and 70, and so that's our winters always.
Yeah. So
you never know what you're going to get.
Yeah. So like what you're feeling right now is probably as cold as it's going to be in February. Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah.
Oh, that's like, literally, I'm not going to pack a jacket. I'm just going to put a sweater. you'll see me get off the plane and I'll be in like shorts and flip flops and be like, yeah, exactly.
Like that's when you know people are not from here. Whenever they come and they're like, where are you from? Like Michigan or whatever. And they're like, this is great. I'm like,
well, it's funny. Like I used to, so when I was in like my early 20s, I used to go to Vegas fairly often. And I always used to go in like, either December or February, because it would go on like the school breaks, right? Yeah. Like reading week or something. And I remember every time I went in February, like I would be walking around in a tank top and like,
oh my goodness,
people would be looking at me, like Americans would be looking at me and they're like, how are you like, it's freezing. And I'm like, what are you talking about? This is like summer weather compared to like what we have at
home. No, we're cold.
Well,
actually, Tommy thinks this weather actually feels good. When he was in the Navy, he lived in Chicago, and he loves it. I'm like,
well, why don't you just send Tommy my way for a winter, and we'll see how he feels afterwards.
He'll probably love it and be like, Lisa, you can just live in the house down South Carolina, and I'll live up here with your mom and your
and my daughter. Yeah, sure, go for it. I'm totally down with that. And I get to live with the dogs and you.
Yes, yes. And just feels like yours, an unfair we'll train. Just have a whole bunch and we'll have a puppy farm.
I'm telling you, I still have a plan eventually, because eventually, like, you know, she'll be old enough that I can leave, right?
Yeah.
I'm going to sell my house here because the real estate will be much cheaper in the States. I'm going to use that money to buy a piece of land next to you. And we're going to just build a dog sanctuary. Kind of like Lee Asher. Do you follow the Asher house on
Yes. Instagram? Yes. Mm-hmm.
Lee Asher. He is living my dream. And I am not okay about the fact that he's living my dream.
Well, that's what that sanctuary where I took puppies.
And yeah.
All just showed up at my house. It's just like, they have everything. Like, they have animals. I mean, people that, you know, oh, I'm going to buy this pot belly pig because it's so cute. It's so little. And the next thing you know, it's a ton.
It's,
you know,
not I mean? A and, tiny little piglet anymore.
Yeah. And I mean, and all these chickens. So people think, oh, let's get chickens. No, you better read up and know about chickens, y'all.
I actually have to tell you, like, the people in my neighborhood here, like, they love chickens. There's a mm-hmm. house right by the backs onto ours. And they built a chicken coop last summer. Those chickens, I tell you, I will never raise my own chickens, but I am so thoroughly entertained by my neighbor's chickens. Like, so thoroughly entertained.
Eventually, I'm going to get me some chickens.
Oh, gosh.
I will.
Oh,
I will
gosh.
Get me some chickens. I gave up on the goat. Okay, I gave up on the goat.
Why? But do you know that, like, goats, you really, so, like, where I live, we have a municipal bylaw because it's like country up here, right? Mm-hmm. That says that we can have, I think it's up to like 4 goats or something in our, which is outrageous when you think about it. But you have to get the permit to have the goats, you have to get your goats in pairs because apparently they don't do well when they're on their own.
Yeah.
Fun fact. Yeah. So, I have a friend, and then I'll let you go because you look like you're about to.
Well, I'm waiting on my dogs to come on.
I mean, isn't that why you have a spouse?
He's working late.
Aww. You know what you're going
to
do?
Been the one to
you got
to
go
out.
Inside. You got to get the treat bag, come outside and open it. Or, like, you know, my go-to is the cheese bag. Open up a bag of cheese.
They They go anywhere. Crazy over the bag of cheese, right? I don't know what it is about cheese, but they like it.
So funny. Yes,
they're running.
So anyway, I'll tell you this, and then I guess I should go feed my kid at some point. So I have made a friend in the neighborhood, and she has a different type of chronic pain illness. And mm-hmm. is that all of your land, by the way?
Yes, it is. And holy all that moly. Way. And
okay, I really am just moving in. I'm letting you know, like, right now, Tommy's totally like 100% correct. I'm moving in. So she has also like chronic pain illnesses and stuff like that, but she's hilarious. She has an emotional support chicken.
Well, I don't want a chicken, but I want Pogo is my emotional support.
But she, like, literally, like, not even joking, she says it's like her emotional support chicken. And I think it is the, like, the funniest thing. Funny in like a brilliant kind of way.
Yeah. Is she allowed to take it, like, on the planes and stuff?
That I don't know. I don't know. But her house is, like,
I know they started, hunkering down on that because people were, like, bringing, like, snakes and...
Yeah, I don't know if she would anyway. Like, they have, like, lots of different, like, her So her son is friends with my daughter, and I dropped her off there the other day, and he comes running out with this like giant bearded dragon in his hands, and I'm like, oh, okay.
So they have a lot of fun in the petting zoo. Like, yeah. So we all bundling up, and Lisa's like, what is she doing?
No, but I was like, look at you rocking that giant like orange ribbon on your sweater.
Oh, I know.
You're ready for the sixth, eh?
That's right. I'm ready.
It's too funny.
I have a glove somewhere.
Well, I think on that note, always lovely chatting with you. I should
probably I hope we didn't cut off any important parts that people are like, well, why didn't they follow up with this?
If so, well, you know, my solution to said problem is send us a message and we'll follow up with another
Up on it. Exactly. That's what, yeah. See, look at that. She can read my mind.
Right. Oops. I'm in your brain.
Are you scared? Oh my gosh. All right, Randall, are we ready? Now I'm going to get all these puppies in. That's the fun part. All right. Because well, if I get a couple of them in, I open the door, get the other one in, and then the other one goes out that was inside.
It's like the Flintstone house.
Yeah. Exactly.
All right.
Thank you, Lisa. You know, you're always a pleasure.
Always happy to chat.
That's right. All right, y'all. We'll talk to you soon. Bye.